Hey, patrons, it's me, David Chen. It is Thursday, December 31st, and I wanted to record this brief audio update to let you know how I'm doing today, maybe reflect on my year a little bit. So if that sounds interesting to you, listen on. If not, absolutely no worries. But a lot of people have been asking to check in on me, see how I'm doing, and so I thought I'd record an audio update, maybe also reflect on the Patreon page, maybe reflect on the year a little bit, give you a little bit of end-of-year content. So how I'm doing? Well, for those who don't know, last week I was diagnosed with a deep vein thrombosis or a blood clot in my arm. I was prescribed anticoagulants and discharged. And I was very lucky because it could have been more serious. I could have needed to be admitted to the hospital, could have spent the Christmas in the hospital, and that would have been much more challenging for me. So I feel very lucky. I've been taking blood thinners for the last week, and my arm swelling has gone down. My wife has measured my arm every day since I got home, and it got smaller the first few days. But then the last few days, it stayed kind of the same. And what's become clear is that my prognosis, my path to recovery, is going to be much slower than I originally thought. In my experience, if you go to the doctor and you have something wrong with you, you know, assuming it's not corona, pre-COVID, right, the way it would go is go to the hospital and something's wrong with you and you take some pills or you apply the ointment and then, you know, a week later it's better. This is clearly going to take weeks to clear up. To this moment, I still can't really make a fist with my left hand. My left hand is still very swollen. You know, it's like still kind of full of fluid. It looks bad. If you look at it, it looks like unhealthy. And so I spoke with my doctor this week and she said, you know, you're on a decent recovery path, but like, again, and I brought this up in the last recording I did of this on Patreon, that like the way this whole situation presented is so weird that she recommended I speak with a vascular surgeon to kind of get a better understanding of what's going on, maybe some risk factors. Because as I mentioned, deep vein thromboses or these blood clots don't usually show up in upper body. She said, like, if she had to estimate, it's like a 10-to-1 ratio, you know, 10 deep vein thromboses in the legs for every one that shows up in the upper body. And so that's odd. And it was the fact that it, you know, came on so quickly and has been so slow to recover, like, there's enough kind of red flags that she's kind of asking me to go see this vascular surgeon to see what else is like, what else I might need to be thinking about. So that's something that's happening today. I'm heading there on New Year's Eve afternoon to see a vascular surgeon to see how risky this whole situation is for me. But that is kind of the basics of what has happened to me, what's going on right now. A couple of other like minor details that might be worth mentioning. Because I was in the ER last week and because I was potentially exposed to people who have COVID, like there was literally people who were, you know, less than 20 feet away from where I was situated in the ER that had COVID. And I live in a COVID bubble, COVID pod, whatever you want to call it. So like it's me and my wife and our friend Carter, and we see each other and basically no one else. And when I say basically, I mean like extremely rare exceptions, only when we're going to see a doctor or anything. Like we basically like never leave this this area of our house. We get everything delivered. Because I was potentially exposed, I had to isolate from the rest of the bubble. So I quarantined, my wife moved out and in with Carter, basically. And that's how we've been living for most of last week. And it was very lovely because they managed to figure out a way for us to all hang out. We basically set up a little table in our garage for Christmas and had Christmas dinner in the open air in our garage. And it was very nice. You know, those who follow me on Instagram will have seen like the stories of, Carter and my wife, they both cooked a lot and they both cleaned a lot because they knew that I was infirm. I couldn't use my hand. And we managed to like have the spirit of Christmas even despite everything that was happening. You know, even despite what was going on, they managed to make things feel like home, even in a extremely cold garage. They kind of decorated it with like wreaths and like lights and everything like that. And we managed to have Christmas together out, like kind of in the open air, even though the bubble was quarantining during that time. And it was nice. We, you know, we wore masks the whole time unless we were eating. And when we were talking, we put the mask back on, you know, so it was very careful. And then this past Tuesday, I think you're supposed to wait around 5+ days after you're exposed before a test will like fairly confidently show whether or not you have COVID. So we waited 5 days. Then I got my COVID test, and I went to a walk-in clinic it was set up outdoors in Seattle. And I made an appointment, but you can just walk up to this thing. You go in and they basically set up this testing situation in these shipping containers. So it's just like these shipping containers and they're open on both ends. So like ventilation, like air can flow through. And they're just putting people through these testing situations like super quick. Like they're processing, you know, I don't know, probably one person every 5 minutes. And you can just walk in, get tested, and I think the local fire department is responsible for the testing, and University of Washington Medicine, like I log onto a website, and in 24 hours, I got my test results from a COVID PCR test, and I was negative, and so the bubble is back together again. Yay, so that's great. But I guess I just feel like extremely lucky, and I don't say this to try to rub it in for people who like don't have the situation I have. You know, I don't want to come off like that because I know it's very easy to come off like that. I know people are living in like much more challenging situations than me. But I guess if there's one thing that I have seen in the last year, it's that there is what I have called on Culturally Relevant and other times I've talked about it, a lack, what I would describe as a lack of imagination on the part of the American people, right? The thing that really threw me for a loop is watching interviews with Trump supporters in the lead up to the election. People asking, how do you think President Trump has handled this this pandemic? And everyone's like, well, he's doing as good as you possibly can. I mean, it's not his fault there's a pandemic. Not his fault there's a pandemic, you know? Who could possibly do any better? And this idea that just tens of millions of Americans can't possibly imagine things being better than they are. Now, I'm guessing most of those tens of millions don't listen to my stuff, but like, I guess I just feel like when I see things operating in a way that are optimal or close to optimal, where you can go in, get tested, it's paid for or it's covered by insurance, get a result within 1 to 3 days, like they say 24 to 72 hours. I guess I just feel the need to let people know that this is what's happening because it's what you can demand too. You know, it's what you should expect from a government that takes care of its people. So those are some reflections on the last week of my life from a health perspective. On the topic of COVID-19, I also recently learned my dad has gotten the first dose of the vaccine, which is incredible to me. My dad works in a hospital, and he texted me recently. He's like, hey, the hospital is one of the first, their priority workers. They're going to get vaccines first. And I've scheduled my dose for, you know, January 21st or whatever. January 11th. I don't remember when it was. And I was so excited. And then he texted me yesterday and he's like, hey, I got my dose yesterday. They like some spots freed up and they dosed me yesterday. And there's something so beautiful to me about this story, and I can't quite articulate it, and I'm going to try to. I think it's this idea that my dad used to work in a shoe factory, you know, in Taiwan. Like he's always been a working class person. When I grew up, in the relatively affluent suburb in Massachusetts, and I, you know, my parents made great sacrifices for me and my brother to live in this affluent suburb so that we could go to the best schools. And one of the memories I have of this time is my mom feeling very self-conscious about the fact that we lived in this affluent suburb, because we would go to this Chinese church, and so she would like mingle with all the other Chinese folks, and Chinese people are pretty competitive. I don't know if you're aware of this. And you know, like, all these kids at this Chinese church are like extremely accomplished and intelligent. Some of them would go on to be politicians. Some of them would go on to be doctors. Some of them would go on to be celebrities of, like, you know, orders of magnitude higher fame and online notoriety than myself. And I remember my mom expressing some regrets, some sadness of the fact that, like, despite all that her and my dad had been able to provide me, they weren't academics. You know, they weren't like business professionals, right? They weren't people who could help me and my brother with math and with our essays and with, you know, physics or whatever the hell else we were doing as homework. Like, they would, you know, hire tutors and like pay for tutors and go into debt to like help me and my brother, but they wouldn't, they didn't have the expertise themselves, basically. And so even as my brother and I grew up in this affluent suburb, like, I think my parents like had this chip on their shoulders, and the chip may have been passed on to me in some ways. And I was, you know, tried to be successful, even though, like, my mom felt bad that she couldn't give me more support when I was in high school, more like academic, educational, you know, career support. And so anyway, that was my upbringing, right? My parents have always been working class. And to go from that to, you know, my brother and I both work at, have worked at like major tech companies at this point. And, you know, we owe a lot of it to our parents who have like done everything they can to set us up for success. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you know that I do a lot of podcasting and other things online, that some of which do well. And so despite what they perceived as disadvantages, they were able to raise children who, in the eyes of the world, are somewhat successful. To go from that, to go from like working at a shoe factory to like, you know, kind of batting above their average when it comes to like putting their kids through like decent high school, college, and then still continue working. And then to be the one of the first to go through this entire ordeal, this whole COVID-19 pandemic, everything, like survive intact, and then to be among the first to get a vaccine in the world, which, by the way, a vaccine that was brought to us as a result of incredible ingenuity on the part of researchers and scientists. And we live in a country where that kind of ingenuity, that kind of testing, that those kind of safety protocols are possible. And despite everything that's fallen apart, we should be grateful for that. And then for my dad to be one of the first people in the country to get the vaccine, you know, and to be one of the first people who's like, he has been working in the hospital, you know, day, like week after week, he's going in, he's wearing masks along with everyone else. Like, for him to be one of the first to receive this protection, because he is an essential worker, a frontline worker. To me, it feels like some version of the American dream. I don't know, something essential about America has happened to my dad. You know, like that. He came to this country with almost nothing, raised kids that are doing okay right now, and that he has continued to work and is now like the beneficiary of the ingenuity and the hard work of scientists who are working their best to stop this pandemic. There's something beautiful to me about, I don't know, it's not full circle, you know, there's no circle there. It's just like, I can't say the circle is complete, but there's something about this event that just makes me feel like some kind of satisfaction that this story has ended in this way for him. I mean, not the end, hopefully, you know, the beginning of the next phase, right? But of his life where he doesn't need to worry about this garbage anymore. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that because it made me feel like there's going to be hope in 2021 in some way. And even though like the US has largely botched its vaccine distribution so far, there's like stories of how doses are going bad and they're not being distributed and they're sitting in, you know, and we're going to be dealing with a lot more of that incompetence and challenges in the near future until we really get this right. And the thing will be drawn out much longer than it has to be. I mean, it already has been, right? Like ideally we're inoculating people 24 hours a day. You're getting an appointment to go to the vaccine clinic at 3 a.m. You know, like ideally this is what's happening, but that's not, we're so far away from that right now. And until that happens, you know, I don't know that this pandemic is going to be in our rear view. But I do think that there is hope that the next few months also, I should point out, I think are going to be pretty tough. A lot of people have been traveling for Christmas. A lot of overtaxed ICUs, a lot of overburdened hospital systems, and it probably will get worse in the next few weeks. It probably will get worse in the next few months. And I guess my exhortation to everyone listening to this is hang in there. We've all been through this event together in various ways. It's touched us in various ways. And it's been a challenge to get through, but I really do feel the end is in sight. It's not near, it's in sight. I think the next year is going to be really, really tough. I think it's going to be a challenge. I think it's going to demand even more of us. But I think at the end of that, there is a possibility that things might get better. And I guess I'm just hoping, praying that all of you out there finding the strength to hold on, finding the strength to do what needs to be done mentally to get you through this time period. And I guess I should just end by saying thank you to you all, because I started this Patreon page kind of, you know, putting my hat out onto the internet and saying, hey, if you value what I do, maybe consider putting some money into this hat. And hundreds of you did. And it has given me hope for myself that there can be a better and more creative and more fulfilling and more satisfying life for me. That is what you have given to me. And I'm extremely grateful for it. You know, I'm getting moved talking about it right now. And so I wanted to say thank you for that. Thank you for this year. I think that my output, my Patreon output might be a little bit slow the next month or two because I'm going to be recovering from this whole situation and I don't know what path it's going to take. And I hope you understand that. And if it gets really bad where I'm like not making anything, I may like, you can do something called suspending the Patreon page. So like people don't pay you anything. And so I might do that if like it gets really, I don't think it's going to get to that point, but like if it gets to bad where like I feel like I just can't take people's money cause I didn't make anything that, you know, that was worthwhile, you know, for them this month, I might do that. But I do want to warn people that there might be some challenges for me in the next, couple months, that might hinder my ability to produce things. I don't think there will be, but who knows? Who knows how the next couple weeks of seeing doctors and getting, you know, ultrasounds and whatever, how that might go. I don't know. You know, the world is unpredictable. But regardless of how the next couple months play out, I do want you to know that I'm so grateful for all of you out there who are just supporting me and making it so that it's a little bit easier to do the things that I do. And I'm so glad that there's people out there that value the work I put out into the world. And I just wanted to say thank you for that. The events of the last week have made me begin the very long process of rethinking what my life's priorities are, right? Because, You know, when you brush up against something that might be life-threatening, it really forces you to take a step back and reconsider the elements of your life. And like, if you know, if you were in a life-threatening situation today and your life was demanded of you tonight, as is said in the Bible, you know, like what, how would you feel about that? You know, how would you feel about how you spent the balance of your life? I don't have the answer for that question. Like, I don't know. I don't have a clear thing of like, oh, I should have spent less time at work. Well, it's like, well, I agree. Definitely, you know, work is not as important as other elements of your life, but work also allows you to have resources and thing and companionship through the friends you make and satisfaction through getting things. You know, so it's like, it's complicated. I'm still working it out, but it definitely has forced me to be like, okay, what do you value, David? What do you prioritize? And I think that's something that this pandemic has done for a lot of us is like something I've said frequently is the pandemic has kind of frozen what your life was, right? Like whatever friends you had, whatever job you had, like a lot of people, those things have not really changed since the pandemic began because we're not going out, meeting new people, joining book clubs or things like that. I mean, it's possible to do those things, but like we're not doing it in real life. And it's caused a great reconsideration of like, hey, did we make the right decisions leading up to this point? And the events of last week have really magnified that for me, have really made me feel like, okay, yes, I've already been thinking about that. I've already been pondering that deeply. But now, like now that I've had this, you know, challenging incident, how am I really allocating my time? How much time do I have left on Earth? You know, I'm getting to the point where there's less in front of it, in front of me than behind me. And how do I want to spend the rest of it? Questions I think we all should ask. And I hope that hearing about me talk about this helps you to think through things, helps you to reconsider what you're prioritizing, and maybe causes you to make different choices that are more fulfilling. I'll close with this thing that I mentioned in the Slash Filmcast After Dark this week, which is I watched this movie Soul this week. And minor spoilers about the plot for Soul, but it's about this guy who has a life-threatening event right before he's about to play a gig that he thinks is going to be his big breakthrough, right? He's a musician. He thinks he's going to get this gig that's going to change his life forever. And the message of the movie is there are things more important than your dreams, in my opinion. That's one of the messages of the movie. There are things more important than your dreams. We spend all this time striving, longing for things to be better than they are, for us to achieve a specific goal. And what we don't realize is like for many of us, achieving that thing will do nothing to change our current state of mind, right? Achieving that thing, it's not like you magically become a different person or you magically become more fulfilled. Like the fulfillment needs to come from inside, and it can't come from external things, because when you achieve a thing that you're looking for, you're not like a different person. You're just the same person who achieved that thing, you know? And I know these are platitudes that you've probably heard before. And so I will keep this to a minimum, but it's what's been on my mind is like, was I working too hard for my dreams? You know, which is a weird thing to say from someone like me who like has pushed themselves so hard over the course of the last, you know, decade to create things of meaning and value. But am I working too hard on my dreams? Because if you work too hard on your dreams, you might miss enjoying things that are available right in front of you. The everyday things in life that we take for granted. The ability to, for instance, use your left arm. Anyway, I hope this message has been helpful and interesting. Let me know if you want more stuff like this. It's easy for me to make, and if it's valuable to you, I'm happy to make more audio like this moving forward, especially if it's something that will keep you subscribed to the Patreon. But either way, thanks so much. I hope you are staying healthy, staying safe during this time, and know that I appreciate everything you've done for me, and I hope that you've enjoyed the things I've been able to put out for you. And I'm looking forward to 2021 with all the uncertainty that it holds. I think it might be a better year, but I will be here, hopefully, and we will be walking through it together. Thanks, folks. Have a happy new year.